Welcome to Coming Up for Air, the Allies in Recovery podcast, with hosts Laurie McDougall, Kayla Solomon, and Dominique Simone Levine.
Good morning, Dominique. How are you this morning?
I'm well, thanks. How are you?
Good. So talk to me. Tell me about what our discussion is going to be about today.
I thought today we'd talk about two situations that we're currently looking at and writing about and go over it in the podcast, because it'll be interesting to our listeners as well. And then if this topic is of particular interest, you can see us writing it up in an edited blog on our regular alliesinrecovery.net site. So one situation that I'll start with is I'm talking to a woman who's in her 60s, and she has a sister who's almost 70 years old at this point. And the sister has drank most of her life, but as is the case with alcohol, oftentimes it's progressing. So she's getting sicker, she's drinking more, she's doing things that she never would do. And one of the most difficult times that they have is these drunken phone calls. So she'll get on the call, she'll call the sister at 5 or 6 in the evening, and you can hear her sipping in the background. And an hour and a half later, she's sounding and feeling different than she did when the call started. And she's having a hard time getting off the phone with her. So she decided she just didn't want to do this anymore. And so she put her foot down and said, I can't have these phone calls anymore. I can't do this right now anymore. I'll let you know when I can, but I can't right now. And the sister, the older sister with the alcohol problem, basically just disappeared from the internet, from the phone, several friends. She had this huge reaction, and it went on for weeks. Nobody heard from the sister. Finally, somebody made a call to the police and got a wellness check, where you can call and just have somebody go by and see if they're home and everything's okay. She was fine. She was surprised. She was, oh dear, have I caused some worry? But now what happens is it's actually the woman I'm speaking to who initiates calls, and she initiates every third week. And that's the only call that happens. And she calls before she typically starts to drink, which is, you know, 4 or 5 in the afternoon. So has a better chance of getting her without having started to drink yet at 1 or 2 in the afternoon. She's telling me the story, and all she's saying is, yeah, I did this, and it created this huge kerfuffle and fireworks and police and wellness checks. And now she's barely talking to me, and she scared us all. And I said, but so now she barely calls you, and I guess you're feeling guilty about that. And she said, oh no, I feel such a relief. And I said, you realize you just did craft. I mean, you just did master level craft work. You managed to change a behavior that was really getting in the way with your relationship with your sister. She wasn't getting any consequence from calling drinking because you were staying on the line with her, and you felt trapped and you felt like you had to. So you managed to change that dynamic, and all you're hearing about is, you know, how much trouble this was when she was missing and the police and all. But remember, when you change a small thing like this, you can be ready for a very strong reaction. And this was a particularly strong reaction. So you thought it all had these different phases and it's all going to go back to the way it was. And I said, right now, you're through the worst. You're much more empowered here to handle calls and when you want to call and getting her where she's had less to drink. This is your boundary. This is all you have to do, is maintain this. Don't let anything else creep back in unless you want it to, but you've done it. You've created a boundary, craft style. You've changed the behavior. You've made her more aware of her drunken calls and what she was taking for granted. You made the sister have a consequence for these drunken calls, and you get relief. And the sister ends up with the police knocking on her door, which nobody likes. And, you know, so there was an additional consequence, but it was the police, right? It wasn't everybody driving to the scene, you know? So a calm response, let's let the police go check. You know, so the whole thing sounds like it was just really good work on behalf of this sister. And she's attending our support, emotional support group, and really is not getting sort of the nuts and bolts of craft the way your psychoed support groups do, and to understand that what she had just gone through was sort of textbook craft.
You know what I like about your interaction with her and discussing with her? It really brings to light how people perceive situations and what they miss. And what I mean by that is, like, she couldn't see that whirlwind of, you know, we've got to call the police, we haven't heard from her in 3 weeks. That at first you think about it in terms of, this is awful, this is horrible. And the natural draw or pull to go back to old habits that you're comfortable with and to want to go back to, okay, she may be calling me, she may be drinking while she's talking to me, but I want to go back to that because that's less of a, in my mind, I know what's happening. Versus feeling like, well, the police had to go all the way over there and I don't want to do that. But actually, that's natural consequences. That's allowing for things to happen in a particular way. And it is very craft, and you're not even able to identify it in the moment. And I love this. I love that you had an opportunity talking to her that you're able to point it out. Oh no, you did engage in craft. You did use some of the skills. You're not even aware of it. And it's not uncommon to have this disruption happen when you do change your behavior. And your loved one is not going to like it. And, you know, you're going to feel like there's all this hoopla. But ultimately, in the end, in the long run, is when there is the payoff. And the payoff is that you feel better. You're not as thrown off because you can't figure out what to do because your loved one is drinking every time you're on the phone together, and you're just changing one minimal thing, one small little thing. You haven't even ended the conversations or the calls, right? You're just calling at a different time. Yeah, I think it's an amazing story. And yeah, it's really the nuances of craft.
We forget that craft is based on behaviorism. And behaviorism is very, very structured. You really have to look for signs. You have to get ahead of the sign because you see the sign coming and cut them off at the pass and suggest something different. You have to really be thinking. And nobody can think in that chaos. And nobody can say, this is no better than what I was doing, what I was going through. This feels dangerous. And oh my goodness, now she's going to, you know, is she alive? So this doesn't feel good. And that's all you can think about. But holding off, and I mean, you got the police, you've got the wellness checks, you can do that. You know, if that's not possible for you, then who will go? You can figure it out. We're not saying you have to, you know, we're not talking about just the police, but the idea of going to check. But the bottom line is you can't get caught in the immediate reactive, chaotic response that you're going to get from the world for changing your little part of this behavior. And you have to wait it out, give it a couple days to calm down. In this case, 3 weeks, and just hold and hold and hold as best you can and wait for that change to come through. It does come through. You've changed it and you've blocked something now that wasn't blocked before, that was open to them before. So that's a big change for the other person. From the standpoint of the sister who drinks, it's like you got people that you rely on for different kinds of aid and support. And having your sister on the other end of the line every week for years is a big one.
I mean, it really does send the message that I enjoy spending time with you on the phone. I love you, right? You're my sister. I want to talk to you. I want to spend time with you. I do not want to spend time with you when you're drinking. And that's just the basics. I often will do this where if you can bring it down to something simpler and compare it to something simpler in life, you can see that, oh, this makes total sense. So for example, if you're out with a friend who even doesn't have a drinking problem or typically doesn't over imbibe, but if you're out with your friend and your friend over imbibes, what do you do? Do you stay there and carry on a really important conversation with them? No, you don't get into it. You find a way to get them home. get them into bed, get them safe, and then you leave. Because why? Because now is not the time to have a deep and meaningful conversation with someone, or even a light conversation. It's not the time. And that's just here. It's the problem is that we're so emotionally involved and wrapped in it that we often can't see out. We can't see why this is so important.
And for families who have experienced near death or suicide attempts or really dangerous, risky behaviors, it's really, really, really hard to sit still and just let it be for a little bit. It can spread. I heard a woman say once, you know, if I don't go visit her every weekend, she's going to use. And so she drives this 45 minutes, even when she's not feeling well, because she feels trapped. And she's convinced that it's her that's going to cause the girl to use. And we're not saying she's not going to use. We're just saying that you are not that important right now.
This is what I call an illusion of control. It's this illusion. And I don't get me wrong. I want everybody to understand I've been there, right? I had that illusion. I even knew it was an illusion. And I still could not stop myself from doing particular things. And in fact, even now, if I'm faced with something really dire or really immediate crisis, this idea that I don't have control over it, sometimes I can't manage that. And I got to go with old habits and old behaviors. And I'm going to say this, that's okay. Be compassionate and be forgiving to yourself. All that craft is asking you to do is make an attempt and try to stick with consistency with your boundaries, but also learning to become aware and recognize that you're going to have moments when you have this illusion that your behavior is what's keeping that person from doing something that's very scary to you. And just be aware of that and find some tiny little way to kind of put a wrench, just a little bit of a wrench in there somewhere where you're changing your behavior and affecting your loved one in a way that, like, I'm not going to be there every time. Like this woman going and visiting her daughter and feeling like if she doesn't visit, then her daughter's going to use. That may be. And you may have to deal with it for a little bit, but also it's, what am I trying to say? It's a way to self-soothe you without making change.
Yeah. And I can talk from the daughter's standpoint too, which is mom's not coming. Crap. You know, what am I going to do with my weekend? And oh, I could use, nobody would know. I mean, you are going to cause some thoughts there. I have the whole weekend and nobody's, yeah, I would be there instantly. And I'm, you know, far from most of the stuff. So she needs to experience that and learn how to deal with those thoughts without using. And if you're constantly stepping in and not allowing those thoughts to happen, you're not doing anybody any favors either. Anybody who's held on to recovery knows that you got to hold on through hard times. You got to hold on through surprises. You got to hold on through minutes, hours. And that's just part of learning. And you got to probably put your hand out and get some help somewhere, because you lack insight and you need to figure this stuff out because it's what's got you by the neck. And that's what the daughter should be working on. And the daughter should be fine for a weekend. And if the daughter's not doing all that, then the daughter gets to learn that open, unstructured time is, as most of us would tell you, is really not a good idea. And, you know, maybe it would get her to look up a meeting or what's going on the weekend that could be positive for her to do. Lots of possibilities. You created so much change in just that decision not to go.
I think you made a really important point in that if mom makes the decision to always be there and to be trapped, you do not give that individual the opportunity to learn how to handle stressful moments, how to handle those thoughts. And the problem comes in, and this is coming from a mom, the problem comes in that we know that. we know that that's what's going to be going on inside of our loved one's head, and we're petrified of it. We're scared to death of it. And it makes sense. It makes total sense that we would feel that way.
You're scared of the reoccurrence of them using. You're also scared of the financial disaster that it'll probably cause. And it kicks back on you, and you end up having to shell out because now it's a hospital. And, you know, so there's a lot of good reasons for why you would go every weekend.
Yeah. And the way we view it oftentimes is I may be trapped in this one area, but I'm not trapped in the other area, right? I may be trapped in having to make these visits no matter what I'm feeling, but I'm not back trapped in that chaos of active use. And I am so petrified of going back there. But like you said, you're actually hanging by an absolute thread during those moments, because there's going to be some, like, what if you get into a car accident? Or what if, right, like, there's all these scenarios where you can't maintain that visiting absolutely every weekend and keeping your loved one from falling over the edge again.
And there it is, that too close a dance, and the words that people have come to use, like codependent or rescuer, or you know, and you end up being like that, really close on their tail because you're so concerned. It just swallows up your own life very quickly. And I don't think that's really recognized by folks in the addiction world. They know addiction swallows up the lives of people addicted, but how addiction swallows up the lives of the people around them who love them. And the work of CRAFT and allies is to pull you out of that and make everything lighter and clearer and get your breath back. So
let me kind of change the direction of our discussion a little bit, because I'd like to talk about another blog post that came up this week that I'm also writing on. I did some thinking about it. So we have a mom that whose loved one is struggling. He's in a really, really, really difficult situation where he was using benzos. And for family members that don't know, when someone is detoxing off of benzos or alcohol, alcohol is the other problem substance that you really don't want to be detoxing at home. For those, because there's the dangers of a seizure that can come with detoxing off of benzodiazepines and alcohol. But in this case, the son actually was trying to detox on his own, and he had a seizure, got taken to the hospital. It's a bit of a story, but then he gets released. He doesn't live with mom and dad, and mom is really scared and nervous and doesn't know what to do about that. She's scared to death that he's going to try and detox off of benzos on his own in his own apartment. And what if he has a seizure and no one's there, no one's around? I really thought about this particular issue, and I feel like this is a twist on module 8. Mm. Module 8 is the, how do you have the sit down conversation with your loved one about treatment? So it's kind of like a combination of module 4, which is the communication module, module 8, which is that sit down conversation about treatment. And usually what we do when we're talking about CRAFT is you're always looking out for wishes and dips. And wishes and dips are things that sound like, I wish that I hadn't dropped out of that class. Or a dip is, I don't want to live like this anymore. Now, this mom hasn't really necessarily heard a wish or a dip, but she has seen her son have a seizure at home. And so we did have a discussion about this. And I basically think that she kind of needs to do a creative version of the sit-down conversation in Module 8, where she's not looking for a wish or a dip, but she's expressing her concerns. So we did talk about it, and we talked about being a little bit more assertive and forward in her conversation with her loved one in saying, hey, this is what happened. So state the facts. This is what happened. I'm concerned. and I need to know what your plan is moving forward. And here are my concerns. My concerns are you're living alone, and this is a dangerous thing. And really have that conversation where you're saying, okay, here's my concerns, and this is what I would like to see happen. And I have a list of detox beds, and I'm totally prepared, and let me know when you're ready. So it's not a matter of, it's getting creative. And I really think that the more that you learn your craft skills, the more creative you can get with it. So in other words, like I started off years ago with the communication skills. Now I can be really creative with all the different skills, very separate from one another. I'm not just making a request or looking for particular circumstances in order for me to implement this particular skill. Instead, I'm kind of like on the fly, able to implement a lot of those skills in creative ways that I hadn't thought of before. And so that's basically what we were talking about. Get creative. Okay, you may not have seen a wish or a dip or heard a wish or a dip, but you kind of saw it. You saw your son have a seizure at the house. It is time to go ahead and sit down and have this conversation and express your concerns. And don't be afraid to be assertive in the things that you would like to see happen.
So can you put words to that? Like, it has its parts. I see that you're struggling. I see that you're trying to quit, and I'm completely just so enamored with your effort and so proud of you for trying. But those benzodiazepines and the beer, those are two of the most dangerous things you could be doing on your own, trying to get off of on your own. And we know what's happened already. So for me, I am truly just super concerned about the possibility of you having another seizure and this time nobody being there. And I know you don't want to go anywhere, you don't want to do anything, but here's the briefest amount of time to get you out of the danger zone, you know, a detox. You know, usually after 3 days, 3 days without a seizure, they'll say, you know, you're out of danger. But because you've been taking benzodiazepines for a very long time and quite a few of them, okay, if you know these two things are what makes seizures, okay, the length and the amount of use. And if this is a heavy user, then you and I both know to expect another seizure. So you got to work with me here, and we got to do something to get you through these next 3 to 5 days.
Yes, I think all of those things, absolutely. But I also like to invite them in to speak first before I'm going to say. So I will often say, do you have a plan to keep yourself safe? And how can we help with that plan? I need to know what your thoughts are on this. And my thoughts would be, I bet you they are struggling in their own mind, trying to figure out, how am I going to do this? And I would also bring in an added piece of, and this is where I was, you know, I would really like to share. So, I'm an ask permission to share kind of gal. I would really like to share some thoughts with you. Would it be okay? And then I would say things like, you know, I'm hoping that you might consider a detox where they can give you some comfort meds, not only keep you safe, but get you a little bit more comfortable than if you're detoxing at home. And what are the barriers to getting into a detox bed? What is it that scares you about going into the detox bed? Let's talk those through a little bit. And be prepared. Make sure you have that list of where they can go for detox. Start talking about what's your plan after detox. You know, where would you like to go after that? I know you know that even after detox, it doesn't end there. The struggle doesn't end there. So let's just talk about plans and how to keep you safe. And I really want to hear what you have to say. Because when you open up the door like that and you pull them in and you make it more collaborative, you have the ability to kind of give it back to them, even your ideas. When you give them your ideas and you say, you don't have to do any of these things, these are just some thoughts, and you let them make those decisions, it's more like, I'm supporting you and I love you and I'm not trying to force you. And then you may have to step away and go through a time period where they're like, no, I'm not going to detox. I'm not. And something may happen again, you know, then it's like, okay, fine, I'll go to detox. And there actually are other alternatives, but we could talk about those another time, another day. But
the idea of taking a little time afterwards too, and just letting it percolate, and putting the list of detoxes or whatever you've found on the side of the fridge, it's somewhat private, or sending it to their text so they have it on their phone. You know, think of ways that let them think about this, because they will cycle through good, bad, and ugly pretty much every day as this goes on. And it's very hard to detox. You know, folks that have addiction issues are, in my humble opinion, after all these years, you know, very sensitive and fragile, and don't tolerate pain well. I've met folks say, oh, 3 days and I was clear of fentanyl and I felt fine. And I went, whoa, who are you? Yeah, but usually it's a struggle, and it's a struggle for a while. So as Lori's saying, the importance of what are we going to do later? How are we going to take care of you during, you know, this very important period? Just some ideas. I've just written them down.
Right. And to me, this is just a twist on module 8 in that sit down conversation. Yep. You still want to find a space where it's calm. You still want to take a very compassionate and invitational, collaborative type conversation. You know, if they get defensive, you start going, no, you don't have to do anything I'm saying. I want to hear what you have to say. This is not about me. And I'm fully aware of that this is about your wishes and your needs and I have my fears, and that's my piece in it. So own it. Yep, I got my fears. I got my concerns because I love you. And then, you know, recognizing, I know this is difficult. This is really hard. And I admire that you're willing to get in there and really try and work on this. And I'm really here in a supportive position. I want to help to make it as easy on you as I possibly can, because I know that this is a battle. This is a difficult thing to go through. So to me, it is. It's a twist on module 8. Maybe we could argue that having that seizure is actually a dip that you are witnessing, and really thinking it out, but being assertive and getting in there and talking about it is absolutely, this is a dire situation. This is a very scary situation, and the conversation really does need to be had. And tiptoeing around and not saying anything, but also not, you know, you don't want to argue with them, because arguing isn't going to get you anywhere either. Come to the middle, get assertive, do a sit-down conversation, do it in the most compassionate and caring way you can, and collaborative way that you can, and look for that blog post, because it's going to be on the website.
Great. Thank you, Lori.
Okay, thank you.
Have a good week, everyone.
Thanks for listening. We hope this episode of Coming Up for Air spoke to you. If you're listening in today on a podcast platform that isn't the Allies member site, please take a moment to give us a 5-star rating. This helps others find the show more easily. If you have a suggestion for a new topic or a guest for the show, please reach out through the Contact Us form on alliesinrecovery.net. Special thanks to our hosts, our guests, and our production team.